This is going to sound quite different to episodes of Norbois that you've heard before. And following the situation that you will have undoubtedly been watching very closely in Ukraine and the Russian invasion of that country, Laura and I felt we can't come on and tell you about all of the new entries that have been announced and try and sound all upbeat and all happy when Russian troops are killing people by invading a sovereign country of Ukraine. And we thought we needed to do an episode of talking about that.
Indeed. So here we are. It's not really the episode we ever wanted to make, but it's the episode we felt we had to make. So, well, I hope you take some comfort that that's what we're going to be talking about. We will obviously be going and talking about other entries next week, but this one is all about Ukraine on Norbois.
Norbois is shameful.
Norbois is lack of respect for Euros.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
The shame that they must be feeling.
Norbois is no fun.
Yeah, welcome to Norbois, the Eurovision fan podcast. My name's Martin, that is Laura, and we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest. That's what we do, and it kind of feels a little bit weird to be even doing that. Like, really, in the grand scheme of things, when there's war in Europe and people are dying in horrific, horrific ways, you think, well, who really cares? Who cares about it? And the fact is, people don't. And quite rightly, of course they don't. We don't care about it when you compare it to what's going on. But we are a Eurovision podcast, and so we felt that it was important to talk about Eurovision and how it's sort of come into the debate surrounding the relationship between Russia and Ukraine and Russia and the rest of the world. Because there has been a big change that's happened with the EBU, and what we're hoping to try and get across really over the next few minutes is why that is significant. Just explain, Chris, if you can, what has been happening and what has been changing from the EBU, the people that run the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yes, so to start off with, Russia made moves into eastern Ukraine. It then clearly was going to continue moving into the rest of Ukraine. The EBU, a lot of people were calling on the EBU to say, what are you going to do about this? Obviously, they'd made actions with Belarus. They suspended Belarus fairly recently. First of all, the contest said Russia would be allowed to compete. And I think a lot of people were quite dismayed at that. A lot of people not very happy, including some of the broadcasters. They called on the EBU to look at the situation again. They said, obviously, it's a non-political cultural event, and they were currently planning to host entrants for both Russia and Ukraine.
And this is the line we hear all the time, isn't it? From
yes,
the EBU.
Yeah.
And indeed, from Eurovision fans around the world, you hear, the Eurovision is not political, and no matter what is going on elsewhere in these countries, you turn up and it's a level playing field for everyone. It's all about the acts that are being sent. It's not about what that country's doing. It's apolitical. But the pressure that there's been on the EBU to act has been significant.
It has. You know, you've had state broadcasters from Iceland, Finland, Norway, the Netherlands. They called for Russia to be banned. Finland said if Russia took part, it wouldn't send a representative to the contest. So clearly this is so new and so unexpected by a lot of people. I think people felt something needed to be done. Something was done. The EBU did decide, and then I think only about 24 hours after that statement, that Russia will no longer be allowed to participate in this year's Eurovision Song Contest. The EBU says it's in light of the unprecedented crisis in Ukraine. And so there you go, Russia not competing anymore in Eurovision this year.
Now, Russia's expulsion from Eurovision is an unprecedented one, and I thought it'd be helpful to speak to somebody who could maybe put that in a bit of context. So please welcome to Norbois a man who knows pretty much all there is to know about Eurovision, Paul Jordan, otherwise known as Dr. Eurovision. Great to have you on, Paul, and I'm sorry that we're talking in such trying and sad circumstances, really. But I thought you'd be a great person to explain just how unprecedented this is as a move from the EBU.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm actually very impressed that they have taken a stand, especially after they released a statement earlier in the week talking about how Eurovision is an apolitical event, it's a cultural event. And actually, they've stood up and said, no, countries of that are not welcome here. So I think this is really unprecedented. We have had a couple of tense political situations before. Ukraine withdrew back in 2015 when they had the war was raging in the east. And also Georgia were asked to withdraw back in 2009. So they selected a song called We Don't Want to Put In. And it was in Moscow that year. It was a year after the war with Georgia and Russia. They were asked to change the lyrics of the song. They refused and they were then asked to withdraw. So they weren't necessarily banned. They were just sort of uninvited. Whereas this is a different case. You've got Russia here who are planning to enter, probably wanting to control their message, control their international image through Eurovision. They use soft power quite a lot, as does Ukraine. But they've been told that they can't take part. And I'm not sure whether we'll see them back, to be honest. I think they might be really offended by this, but I think it's a great decision and it's the right one.
I was speaking to people within the EBU or with links to the EBU during the week who were saying, you know, I can't see them banning Russia. They will stick to that line that it's apolitical and that, yes, bannings have happened in the past, but it's been on because of the song. It's because that song was deemed as being political and then it was removed. And I think maybe people might struggle to understand the difference, but the difference is significant.
Absolutely. This is nothing to do with them breaking the rules. This is actually to do with international law. You know, what we're seeing in Ukraine is an unprecedented and completely unprovoked attack by a sovereign country on another sovereign country. And it's really shocking. I think with the EBU, it's a challenge because it's a membership organisation. And I think what happened was that I think there were up to 8 countries said they weren't going to take part. So they were faced with mass boycotts. And I think the statement was quite right. It was going to bring the contest into disrepute. But I think it's also that sense of solidarity as well and standing up for actually right and wrong. And sometimes there isn't a kind of black and white line, but I think in this case there is. There is no grey area here. And what I would say is Eurovision is very powerful because you do have countries that technically don't even have diplomatic relations. Like look at Azerbaijan and Armenia. And yet for that one night of the year, they put those things aside. They take part in the event and they share the same stage. I understand the sentiment behind that, but this is completely different. And I think it also sends out a message that actually, you know, international law needs to be obeyed. We have sovereign countries taking part in this. And if countries don't recognise each other's borders and each other's right to exist, then why on earth are they taking part in Eurovision itself? Because that's really contradictory.
And you mentioned, of course, that first of all, the EBU put out a statement saying that because they're apolitical, Russia could take part. Do you think they changed their mind because of pressure from member broadcasters? Obviously, quite a few broadcasters threatened to boycott it or were on the verge of doing that. Do you think that was part of their decision? And also kind of what are your thoughts on how long it took them to make that decision?
I think it's always challenging. And the only experience I can talk to is when I worked as a comms manager for Eurovision back in the contest in Stockholm in 2016. There was a flag policy, which was, you know, about what flags were permitted and what were not. And unfortunately, an internal document was published on the venue of the website. It caused a big international outcry, you know, the ISIS flag along with the Welsh flag, you know, it's slightly ridiculous. I, as a comms person, was telling them about the ramifications of this. Of course, you've got the reference group, which are the governing body. They take the decisions, they consult with the members, and they do listen to the comms team, but ultimately it is their decision. So I had to communicate what they had decided. And that week, there was a lot of debates going on, but they, you know, stuck to their guns. And that's what we did right up until the end. And then they changed their mind after a lot of debate and a lot of discussion. So I imagine that's what happened this week. I imagine they were going to go along with the apolitical line, which absolutely, you know, that's what makes Eurovision really special. But I think as the situation unfolded, as the severity of the week went on, I think they were left with no other choice other than to change their minds. I think it's unfortunate that they did go out with that statement. I think they possibly could have waited a little bit longer. I really feel for the team, actually, because it would not have been an easy decision to make, nor would it have been an easy decision to communicate either. And I think they did really well. And I think it's completely in line with their values. And it's to their credit, really. Eurovision often gets accused of ignoring things. You know, look at Belarus for a number of years, they took part. There were real allegations of human rights abuses in Azerbaijan as well, and a number of other countries. And actually, here we have the EBU really sticking to their values. Last year, they banned Belarus. They threw them out of the contest after they selected their entry that was deemed to be very political. They refused to change their entry. And now they're actually kicked out of the EBU. I think they have a 3 or 4 year ban purely because of what's been going on in the country, which is completely at odds with the values of public service media and democracy, essentially. So I think actually it's great to see the EBU really showing their teeth and really standing by their values and publicly acknowledging that, really for the first time.
I know on Twitter there have been people saying, well, if you've banned Russia, for example, why not, you know, other specific countries? And do you think this is going to open the door for other bannings or give more evidence that that should happen because of political decisions?
I think decisions on banning countries are taken on a case-by-case basis. So I think what we'll see is perhaps, you know, other situations being investigated. But this is a very different case in point. You have a full-scale invasion here of a sovereign nation that was due to take part in the contest. So I think it's very different. There are, of course, political disputes. The EBU don't really get involved in those things. But what they do is they promote public service media. And they view that as a really important part of a democracy and a functioning democracy. And they'll continue to do that. And I think also a lot of the EBU's work is often behind the scenes. So a lot of it's around training media professionals, supporting journalists, supporting those who have perhaps challenges reporting in those countries. So, for example, in Belarus, they'll be supporting journalists who are being critical of the government. They really are championing the freedom of the press. And I think that will continue. There are obviously situations, if you look at Azerbaijan and Armenia, if you look at, you know, the Balkan countries, there's still tensions there. You could argue that, you know, countries that are abusing human rights maybe don't have a place in the contest. Maybe they are against the EBU's values. But at the same time, we're also producing a TV show here and something has to kind of give. And I also appreciate it's a very sensitive subject, but often politics comes into these things, whether it's the World Cup in Qatar, whether it's, you know, the Olympic Games in China. And, you know, I think it's a great thing that people are talking about these things. But ultimately, I don't think the EBU can be the world's police either. I think it's up to the broadcasters and the members to express how they feel. And they've done that here, and the EBU has taken action, and I think it's been the right action.
And how have other people reacted to the EBU's decision? And I'm particularly interested in, I don't know how, whether you've had a chance to speak to many Russian Eurovision fans, but how are people reacting to what the EBU has decided?
I've not spoken to any Russian fans myself, but what we'll say is the stuff that I've seen and the things I've seen online and spoken to other people in the UK and also in Ukraine and across Europe has been largely supportive. I'm in touch with a lot of the heads of delegation and seeing what they've been posting on social media. A lot of them were really championing this decision. I think it's obviously a great shame for Russia and for Russian Eurovision fans, but ultimately I think it's a really difficult situation, and it would have been quite the pantomime, I think, if Russia had taken part. You know, the booing would have just been appalling. And you know, that's never nice. It's not in the spirit of the event. And actually, I think the artists, not necessarily their fault, what's going on. And I think to take it out on them would be unfair. But it's also interesting. There is a lot of solidarity within Russia. You know, you see the protests on the streets, those very brave people. But there's also been big stars that have been coming out. And one of the stars in Russia, Sergei Lazarev, of course, has represented Russia twice. He's openly condemned it on his social media posts. So I think it just goes to show you can't necessarily judge a country and a people by its government.
And what about Ukraine's entry into Eurovision this year? Do you think that's likely to go ahead? Obviously, the first entry that was chosen is now being suspended and they've gone with the second choice. But do you think that will still happen?
I really hope so. I think it's really important that Ukraine takes part this year. Excuse me, I feel quite emotional because, I spent quite a lot of time in Kiev when I was doing my PhD and seeing the streets of Kiev, on the news like this, it's really quite shocking. I spent several months there back in 2007. I went to Eurovision in 2005. Now I've got friends there who are, you know, posting photos that they're in the underground, you know, sheltering. This is a normal city. This is a normal country. And it's just, it's really tragic. So I really, really hope Ukraine goes. I hope that they do well. I think, you know, the song itself is interesting. Ukraine, what they often do is they know how to stage an entry. And, you know, even if their song isn't that good, they know how to what's it called, polish a turd. they tend to do quite well in terms of the staging of their entries. I really hope they do take part. Not unprecedented. If you look at Bosnia, Herzegovina in 93, they literally escaped gunfire to take part in Eurovision. decision. They had to run from the airport across the runway. So these things are really powerful. And I think it'd be a really powerful symbol if Ukraine does take part. And I think the reception they'll receive would be amazing. But I find it very difficult actually to talk about. It's quite emotive, especially when you see a city as safe that you know very well and you know you've got friends and people there. Yeah, it's really quite upsetting.
Well, Paul, I don't want to upset you any further. So please, you know, if you need a moment, please take a moment. But I would love to hear a little more of your memory of Kyiv and the people that you met there and how resilient Ukrainians are at this terrible, terrible time for that country.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I would say is, I mean, I really feel for the people of Ukraine, because not only do you have this situation, but you also have rampant corruption in the country that's been there for a long, long time. And I remember the Orange Revolution in 2005, the contest took place there that year, and there was real optimism in the air. There really was a sense of something is changing, and people were really excited to host Eurovision. People coming to the Ukraine for the first time, they even waived restrictions on visas for EU citizens. And that was a three-month trial for Eurovision, and basically it's still in place today. So it's amazing how Eurovision has actually shaped Ukraine's foreign policy in some way. And I remember just this sense of things being better. You know, it was beautiful springtime, it was lovely weather and people were out in the street, and it was just had very happy memories. But Ukraine is really, you know, the people have really suffered. Not only is it a very poor country, it's also, as I say, very corrupt. Successive Ukrainian governments have let the people down, and now they're faced with this challenge. But what I would say is I think it's really united people in a way that wasn't there before. Ukraine was always quite divided between East and West in terms of language, and now there's a real sense of Ukraine as a country, and I think Ukraine as a people. People are incredibly resilient. And, you know, when I was there, it was challenging. I mean, I'm not going to say that it was all wonderful. I was really at one point completely fed up of being stopped by the police. This is 2007, and, you know, I was often asked for my documents. I gave them those. They would claim that they were the wrong documents. Basically just, you know, corrupt police officers. But this often happens in a lot of other countries. So there were times when I really hated it, but then there were times when I absolutely loved it. And I've got some great memories of going out with friends. I remember being astounded by the price of vodka in the supermarkets. It was like a pound a bottle. a very merry time as well there. But it's been amazing to see Kyiv in particular really transform over the years. You know, when I first went, there weren't that many good restaurants. The transport was always pretty good. The metro system was, you know, Soviet era metro system, and that was amazing. But it was never really that geared to tourists. The hotels were very poor quality. People didn't really speak very good English. And then, you know, when I went again back and forward over the years as part of several research projects, I was there shortly after the so-called Euromaidan in 2013 and 14. And that's where Kyiv was completely different in terms of, you know, it was almost like a bomb site, the Maidan Square, after the massacre. And that was really harrowing to watch and to see. But then 2017 was there quite a lot for Eurovision. And you've got some brilliant restaurants popping up, some really cool clubs. There's some really nice places in Kyiv. And it's really a city that, you know, was doing well. And that's what makes it all the more upsetting, is the fact that each night you think, gosh, what next? Could it be, you know, another Grozny? And I really hope and pray not, but it's very worrying. But what I would say is that I think you should never underestimate Ukrainian people. Incredibly strong, resilient people that have been through a lot, and I wish them all the best. But one thing, you know, Ukraine in so many ways is really inspiring. But it's also very sad, as I say, and I remember being struck by a politician's quote saying Ukraine never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity, and I really hope that there's no opportunities missed here, because literally its existence depends on this and what's going on just now.
Now, thinking about Russia, and I suppose people probably aren't bothered about this at the moment, but looking towards the future, you know, is there a route back? What would it need to do? Is it just going to be perhaps peace talks are made or something happens? Or, because as you say, this is quite an unprecedented situation. So I don't know what would be the qualifications where they could be let back in, really.
I think it depends on the broadcaster, but ultimately there's also an issue now with Russia as a pariah state and Putin as well. I think if Putin was to go and there's a new government formed in Russia, then maybe they would look more kindly on them. It really just depends on the context. I mean, now they've made this bold move. You know, if the war is still going on next year, let's hope it's not, but it could be. You know, what happens? And, you know, it depends on who's hosting. I guess there's a lot of variables. It's really hard to predict. I never thought you know, a month ago, we'd be sitting here in this situation. So it's very challenging to predict anything. But I would say that there'll be a lot of dialogue with the other members, and it'll be a discussion between the EBU and its member broadcasters. The challenge as well is that, you know, the Russian state media is so tightly controlled. It depends on whether they're upholding the values of the EBU, and if they're under government pressure, and if they're really, you know, not telling the truth in the news, and, you know, all of these things, like in Belarus, then there will be sanctions against them. So the irony is that Russia is a big audience and it's very, very popular. So it makes the EBU's decision, I think, a little bit braver, actually, because they've been willing to sort of sacrifice their audience for what is essentially their values.
Paul, thank you so much for giving your thoughts and your expertise on this. I said at the start of our chat that I'm sorry we were chatting in such circumstances, and that's absolutely true. And let's hope that the next time we talk, it's with happier news for the people of Ukraine and you know, happier Eurovision news as well. But thank you so much. Been wonderful to talk to you, and we'll catch up with you before too long.
Thank you very much. And I think we all need a bit of Eurovision in our lives. And I think come May, it'll be something we'll be all embracing, and hopefully with Ukraine too.
So lovely to get a bit more insight there from Paul about what this all means, and also his personal insights into Ukraine and what it's like there. And I think a lot of people feeling like him, because a lot of Eurovision fans will have been quite recently to Ukraine when they hosted the competition. We didn't actually end up going that year, but you just seen on Twitter all the Eurovision fans uniting really behind Ukraine. And I think it's interesting to know a lot of Eurovision entries, including Russian entries, have united behind Ukraine in this, which, I mean, some people might be quite surprised at, because you would expect, you know, the entries, the national entries, would be quite pro their own country. But Manzina, for example, who represented Russia in 2021, we know she was already quite divisive against the government.
Yes. Yeah. She was quite outspoken politically, yes, certainly on the issue of women's rights in the country and that sort of thing. So perhaps slightly unsurprising that she would want to get involved, but still very brave for doing so, considering what we've seen happen to people who voiced dissent in that country.
Totally. And she's put, I think it was on her Instagram, she said, it's one of those mornings you wish you'd never woke up. You don't understand where to go, who to help, sitting at the corner of the bed and crying because it's not my choice. The current aggression is against my will, against the will of my family, I believe against the will of our peoples. There are also Ukrainians in my family, my daughter-in-law from Ukraine, my future husband's half Ukrainian. Russia and Ukraine are not just two countries, we're family and friends. Any war between us is fraternal, but we all need to be very careful now. Do not succumb to panic and information manipulation. So, I mean, and I think that does speak to the fact that Russia and Ukraine, you know, obviously they share a border, but they share a lot of common cultural things as well. And although there has been this back and forth between Putin and Ukrainians' leaders for quite some time, I think a lot of the sort of normal citizens would see them as friends, really. Sergei Lazarev, who was the Russian entry in 2016 and 2019, has also been on Instagram as well, saying, please, everybody, stop, get together, sit at the negotiating table, let people live. No one's supports war. I want my children to live in a peaceful time. I want to live and create in peace. No to war. So a lot of people very against this, even in Russia.
And when I think about what's going on now, I look back to the 1950s when the Eurovision Song Contest was created. It was created partly to promote peace in Europe.
Yes.
It was born out of the ashes of the Second World War into a world that was starting, the very beginnings of the Cold War. And it was trying to promote peace on the continent of Europe. And that peace has been shattered by the actions of Russia and the actions of its president, Vladimir Putin. And I think it's such a sad day, of course, for the people of Ukraine, of course, for Europe. But, you know, from the point of view of Eurovision, in fact, we're doing a Eurovision podcast, it's a sad day for Eurovision as well, that the EBU has felt so moved and so pressured by international events that it's had to say to Russia, the country that looked like, remember we spoke to Steve Rosenberg, the BBC's Moscow correspondent, and he talked about Russia in the 90s after the fall of the at the Berlin Wall and the end of the Soviet Union, he talks about Russia coming in from the cold, coming into Eurovision, embracing the values of openness and democracy and giving people a voice. Now look where we are now. And it's almost like this decision by the EBU is a symbol of any pretense of those values going.
Yes, but, you know, by Russia's own hand, really, that Russia's forced their own hand.
Of course.
It's completely the right thing for the EBU to have done. I can't see how, and I understand what Paul's saying there, you know, like this is a very difficult decision for them to make. And some people have said when they first came out and said this is an apolitical event, maybe they were sort of putting their hands in their ears, they were putting their heads in the sand, trying to hope it would go away and hoping that because Russia is obviously a big power and certainly does bring a big audience, that would be acceptable. But I am glad they did look back at it, because I think it really would have brought Eurovision into disrepute. And I know part of it is to possibly foster peace and create peace, but you can't let a country like that, you know, and under the pretense that it's equal to everyone else, when clearly it isn't, when clearly it doesn't care about peace. That's the problem. If perhaps there had been some signs of peace talks or something like that, then perhaps, you know, they could have carried on being in there. But when it just doesn't care about peace, you know, why on earth should it be part of a contest that's all about fostering those kind of feelings? So I really think they made the right decision. I don't know what that means for Russia in the future, though.
No, and I think any future where Russia is in the Eurovision Song Contest is a long way off at the moment. It certainly feels that way. I'm completely with you. Of course I am. I think it's the right decision that Russia goes. I thought it in 2014, to be honest. I think if you invade another country, what you do at the Eurovision Song Contest really is of no consequence, and you should be out. You shouldn't be playing by our rules, you know, by taking part in a TV show. If you refuse to play by our rules and the rules of all decency and humanity in real life, and it was almost playing into their hands that they've been in the contest since that point. But that's another story, and those things have happened. The decision has now been taken, and I believe, and I'm sure most people, most reasonably thinking people, would think it was the right one. And I expect a lot of Russian Eurovision fans are probably maybe even listening to this podcast and thinking the same as well. And I think there's an understanding, as Paul was saying, we were talking about the people of Russia are not necessarily to blame here as well. And this is President Vladimir Putin. This is what has happened to the country over many, many decades since those thawing of relations in the 1990s. Look, we've talked a lot today, and it's a really sad day. It's the podcast we didn't want to make, the podcast, as we said earlier, that we felt we had to. Your thoughts are always welcome. Normal service will be resumed next week. A lot to talk about, a lot of wonderful things that are celebrated by the Eurovision Song Contest to talk to you about. We will do that all next week on the next edition of Nul Poit. Thank you for your thoughts, and Cress has the information that you need on how to get in touch.
Yeah, and we'd love to hear your thoughts, obviously, on this or all things Eurovision. You can tweet us at Poit Nul on Twitter. Thank you very much. I'll just drop in saying thank you, ESC Hot Takes on Twitter, who said, dropping a few of my fave podcasts here, all a good mix of well-formed opinion, ESC news, and the occasional hot tea. And they included us in that list. So thank you very much, ESC Hot Takes.
Thank you.
Certainly. I did reply saying, yes, we're all very well informed on this podcast. thank you very much for that. Also, you can talk to us on Instagram. We'll be trying to put up more posts on there. We are Nul Poit Podcast on Instagram, or just drop us an email. Maybe you are listening from Ukraine. Maybe you have Ukrainian friends. Maybe did you visit Ukraine when it was hosting the Eurovision recently? We'd love to know your memories of it and what you hold dear from that time. Please do send us an email, nulpoitpodcast@gmail.com. We'd just love to get your reaction to this and your thoughts.
Thank you, and see you again on another edition of Nul Poit.